everyone, and welcome to episode 142 of Rain Delay Radio, a baseball podcast. My name is Naim, and I have to apologize for there not being an episode last week, because the only person free was Pat, and Pat recorded a 40-minute episode that I just never edited and released because I'm bad. But
I recorded a 40-minute episode. It was fantastic. And it probably will not see the light of day until we have like a holiday weekend coming up. And
yeah, at some point we'll release
the unreleased episode.
Well, yeah, exactly. We'll say from the vaults the unreleased episode 142, and you can go back and listen to just a 40-minute. There's other things in the episode, but I think a full 20 minutes of it is probably yelling about Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Yeah, and that voice obviously you heard is Pat. How's it going, Pat?
Good, pretty good.
That's good. Yeah, let's keep this short. Normally we talk a little in the intro, but we're going to keep it short because we got a lot of news and a lot of wild card previews. We don't have full wild card preview segments like we did last year, but we will. Hopefully our plan is to have an episode out this Friday previewing the division series. So we'll get to that when we get to it. So we'll have a special episode on Friday to talk about the division series. And we'll have wild card previews later in this episode. But first we want to start with some sad news, a real 1-2 punch of sad news. Earlier this week, Brooks Robinson, Orioles legend, one of the greatest third basemen to ever play, passed away heart disease at age 86, which at 86, you know, heart disease, essentially natural causes. The man, you know, beat cancer. He fell out of a chair at age 70 something, stayed in the hospital for a month, still another 10 years after that. But finally, at some point, it's everybody's time. And so Brooks Robinson, has passed away. Today, as we're recording, I believe we got the news that Tim Wakefield passed away, which we had heard earlier this week from was not supposed to release the news, but we heard that he and his wife both had cancer, which is awful. Wakefield has passed away. I believe his wife is still with us for now. But you know, we don't know what the situation is there exactly with her. Her name is Stacy Stover, but Tim Wakefield did pass away today. George Kirby threw a knuckleball in his honor. He was 57 years old, and I don't remember what kind of cancer he had.
It was brain cancer. Yeah,
brain cancer. So, yeah,
very sad.
Very sad. I mean, two like we said, you know, great players. Great guys from all stories of them. Wakefield won the Roberto Clemente Award in 2010. Brooks Robinson, obviously, as I said, actually he won the Clemente Award in 1972. I didn't realize they had a Clemente Award.
I didn't realize that either. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was, the first one was in 71. So Brooks Robinson won the second ever Roberto Clemente Award.
Very nice.
Two great guys, great players, and they will be missed by all the baseball world, but especially, of course, the Orioles and Red Sox families.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about some less sad stuff that is still a little sad. I mean, like bittersweet, you know, in a way. I'll start with the thing that I'm saddest about, I suppose, aside from the two deaths. Adam Wainwright played his last game this week. He officially had his retirement ceremony before today's Cardinals game. In the episode, the unreleased episode, Pat talked about how he got 200 wins last week, which was awesome because it really, I mean, look, Adam Wainwright had a terrible season this year. It was maybe the saddest farewell season.
Terrible is an understatement.
He
did not belong in a major league mound.
It was abysmal.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's, yeah. Like, it's funny because I was like, well, I was going to say, like, you know, other players have had really bad seasons, but like Miguel Cabrera, who we're going to talk about in a second, did not have a good season this year. He had a really bad season. Adam Wainwright was worth -2 baseball reference war, which is, I mean, I don't think I've ever seen that number.
Yeah.
Like, that's astoundingly bad. They were just at some point chucking him out there to get those last couple of wins. He had three wins, I think, like from like June until last week. Or like June to like late August, he was stuck on three wins for the season, which was on 198 for his career. He got to that 200 wins. The Cardinals said they're considering whether he's going to start or not, which essentially would have been in this final series, a home series against the Reds. They decided he was not going to pitch, which, you know, made sense. And then the discussions were sort of, depending on where the Reds are, they may or may not allow him to take an at bat. And in the first game of the final series, the last weekend series, last home series against the Reds took a 14-3 lead or something like that. And at that point they were like, all right, well, now you can let a pitcher hit. And so he did came out. I kind of think they should have let him hit the next two games as well, because the game after that, the Cardinals took a big lead. And then after that, the Reds were eliminated, so the game did not matter anymore at all. So I think he should have just DH'd that game. But they let him at least get the one at bat, which is nice and, cool. Adam Wainwright, before the DH, was always a pitcher who could hit fairly well. He won a Silver Slugger in 2017, and was always like a pretty solid hitter as a pitcher. 10 home runs in his career. His first career at bat, he got a home run. So that, like, he's always been proud of his hitting. So it was cool to see him get an AB and hit a, it was a sharp grounder to second, which, according to StatCast, was the second hardest ball hit by a Cardinal that day.
Just unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, they got a puppy.
They did get a puppy. That was cool to see.
Wainwright had promised his kids that when he retires, they'd asked him, can we get a puppy? Can we get a puppy? He was like, when I retire, we'll get a puppy. And that was before last season. And so he made the wait a whole another 2 years to get that puppy. And then at his retirement ceremony, Albert Pujols and Yadier Molina came and surprised him. I'm sure it was a kind of a surprise. I'm sure he kind of knew, yeah. But they came and surprised him and did that. What I thought was a little cool that probably would not get noted most of the time is that John Rooney, who was the Cardinals radio play-by-play guy, he sort of conducted the festivities. Mm-hmm. And Rooney came to the Cardinals in 2006, which was Wainwright's rookie year.
Right.
So, like, aside from two innings in 2005, John Rooney called Adam Wainwright's entire career.
Yeah.
And which does not happen a ton nowadays, so it is cool that like Rooney got to do that, because like Rooney called the White Sox up until they won the World Series, and then contract disputes, he left, and he was the color commentator for the radio for the Cardinals for a while. And then when Mike Shannon retired a few years ago, he became the play-by-play guy. But yeah, John Rooney has called Adam Wainwright's almost his entire major league career. So very cool that he got to be the one to sort of conduct the festivities, which I'm sure he would do for lots of guys.
Right.
Like that's kind of part of the job description, but it's, I think, especially cool that he did it for Wainwright.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. That is Wainwright. I don't think there's anything else with the Wainwright stuff.
Do you think Wainwright is a Hall of Famer?
No.
The 200 wins.
No. I mean, like, yeah, it's funny because I asked this question. First of all, this last season definitely hurt. I asked this question in our Slack group, like, because he had four top three Cy Young finishes.
Yeah.
He was always right, like, at least in, like, in his peak, in his prime, he was right on the cusp of Cy Young.
Right.
He had an eighth place MVP finish, a couple more top 20 finishes. And like even in 2021 at age 39, like he had two seasons ago, he had a great season.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Like, he's not that far removed from a good Adam Wainwright season. 206 innings, 305 ERA, seventh in Cy Young voting, 3.8 baseball reference war. Like, it's a good season, And he just, like, the age caught up to him finally. I mean, last season was not a great season, but it was an okay season.
It was a decent season.
And then it wasn't, perfectly adequate. 1.9 baseball reference war for age for a 40-year-old. He just really completely fell off the cliff this year.
Yeah.
200 wins, I think, is not really at the threshold to, like, definitely give it to a guy. Here's the thing. he might get a veterans committee selection, yeah. like as like a, you know, oh yeah, here's a guy who was great and like good in his era. Does he deserve to be a Hall of Famer? Like he might be like a Harold Baines-esque, like, does this guy deserve to be in the Hall of Fame?
Right.
You know, like, and by the way, again, by Baseball Reference War, Baines is 38.8, Wainwright is 44.9. So they're quite close. Baines is a Hall of Famer. Should he be a Hall of Famer?
No.
Right. Like, we all agree Harold Baines shouldn't be a Hall of Famer. Like, would I love to see Adam Wainwright in the Hall of Fame? Absolutely. Yeah. You know, like I grew up watching Adam Wainwright pitch for the Cardinals. Like, this is going to be this coming season is, you know, 2024 is going to be the first time that I don't see Adam Wainwright or Yadier Molina or Albert Pujols wearing a Cardinals uniform. And it's going to be weird. You know, it's like, it's just Arenado and Goldschmidt are like the elder statesmen, even for the Cardinals. I'm like Michaelis, you know, it's like, all guys who had careers with other teams before coming to the Cardinals, you know, everybody who at this point who we've drafted and developed is on the team is still fairly young,
right.
Which has not been true in a while. And it's just, I mean, this is a whole new era of Cardinals baseball and it'll be interesting to see. But yeah, for the Wainwright question, like, no, he probably shouldn't be a Baseball Hall of Famer. But he'll, you know, he's a guy, it's interesting, right? Because a lot of times with these guys retiring, you talk about whether they're going to go into coaching or go into other things or whatever, right? Like Miguel Cabrera, who we're going to talk about in a moment, has already been announced as special assistant to the GM or whatever.
Right.
And Pujols technically is in the Angels front office because of his tenure services contract. You know, Yadi, people talk about, like, he already was a manager on the field. He's probably going to, you know, at some point come and coach. Wainwright is a guy who is a natural broadcaster. He broadcasted a little bit in the last couple of postseasons when the Cardinals weren't in. So he feels like a natural fit to be a Cardinals broadcaster, a natural fit to come on and do color commentary, or post game or, you know, a bit of both.
Right.
And, you know, he could win a Ford C. Frick award, you know, like it could be one of those things, right? Where like he gets a veterans committee thing as like player/broadcaster.
Yeah.
Yeah. To answer the actual question, do I think Adam Wainwright is a Hall of Famer? No. He's going to get in the Cardinals Hall of Fame. He's going to get a red jacket. He and Yadi might get like a co-statue, you know, of like Waino throwing to Yadi. But yeah, I think there were the mid-career injuries and, you know, the years of averageness that I think just don't do it for him. But I'll still love him all the same.
Right.
Let's talk about somebody who is a surefire, probably first ballot Hall of Famer.
Oh, without a doubt.
Miguel Cabrera, who also played his last game this weekend. You know, we haven't really talked much about Miggy this year because we wouldn't talk much about Wainwright either, but like Miggy was on a team that wasn't expected to be super successful like the Cardinals were. And like also did not have a great season, and so just sort of quietly goes off into that good night, you know. Yep. Had a nice retirement tour, got a bunch of gifts, including probably way too much liquor for a recovering alcoholic, but you know, he's a quiet end to a great career.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and then the last three seasons, you know, like, or four, like, but you know, what can you say? He's Miguel Cabrera, you know, he just, since 2017, he's been bad. But before that, man, that dude was incredible.
He's just one of the best to watch. Like, I always loved watching Miguel Cabrera play,
yeah.
Especially at that peak. And it just, like, it was really sad how quick he fell off.
It's kind of been a crazy era for first basemen like that we grew up in, you know.
Yeah.
Like, because if looking at the first base Jaws leaders, right?
Yeah.
Number two, this is all time. Number two is Albert Pujols.
Yeah.
Number 11 is Miguel Cabrera.
Yeah.
Number 12 is Joey Votto.
Yeah.
Number 15 is Todd Helton.
Yeah.
Number 17, Paul Goldschmidt.
Yeah.
Like, these are all dudes we watched a good chunk of their career. Bagwell's on this list as well. Bagwell's number six, and Tomy's number 10. Like, these guys are already in the Hall of Fame. We watched a lot of Hall of Fame first baseman play. Freddie Freeman is 25, number 25, and he is He's
absolutely a Hall of Famer.
A decade at least of great play, right? Yeah. Freddie Freeman is absolutely a Hall of Famer, but he's got four more years left on his Dodgers contract, and he's already 25th all time, you know, by Jaws, greatest first baseman. So, like,
it is wild that he's gotten better since going to the Dodgers.
It's insane. Well, I mean, it's you know, by the way, anything I say here is satirical. The Braves cheating factory didn't really get going until he left, and the Dodger cheating factory has been going for years.
That's true.
So
that's right.
So
yeah.
You know, so they really turned him from an elite hitter to an incredibly elite hitter.
Yeah,
he won the MVP like the year before. Was he the 2020 MVP?
Yes, he was.
Yeah,
yeah.
He was 2020 MVP. So like that. That only kind of counts, but like still, he was an MVP caliber player before going to the Dodgers,
yeah.
And then like yeah, somehow got better. it's wild. But yes, Miguel Cabrera again played. They sent him in to play first base, and he did not have a glove because he. I think he has not played first base since 2021. So he didn't even have a glove. So he had to borrow Torkelson's glove, and then he signed it afterwards for Torkelson and wrote some of his accolades, which is like so cool for Tork.
Yeah, he said he's going to retire that glove and just put it in his man cave, which is
of course.
Awesome.
Yeah, I mean, of course, right? Like, yeah, like you get an all-time great ball player who you got to play with, who honestly, in some ways, you supplanted, right? Like,
right.
Torkelson has played first base since Cabrera stopped playing first base, essentially. Like, he took over his job at first base. So, like, the guy who you the Hall of Famer who you took over for, signed a glove for you, wrote around his accolades on him.
Yep.
That's
super cool.
It is, you know, we talked about how sad the end of Wainwright's career was. Cabrera has not, like I said, been good for 7 or 8 years.
Yeah.
He'd just been making a ton of money on the Tigers roster. But like the last time he hit more than 20 home runs was 2016. Yeah. And that was 38 home runs. Then it was 16, 3, 12, 10, 15, 5, 4. So he like limped his way to 500. But like he was a dude who you would have thought like, In 2013, Miguel Cabrera was surefire for 600, and then just limped his way to 5, which is sad. And it's like kind of like Giancarlo Stanton, you know, who like Giancarlo Stanton quietly hit his 400th home run this year. It's just like, you know, and Stanton still hits home runs, but that's like all he does, you know. Like Stanton will probably limp his way to 500, you know, same as Miggy did
somehow.
It's just because he's gonna hit nothing but home runs for the next 5 years. Ooh. And then he'll be out of baseball because he can't do anything else. He's got 4 more years left on his Yankees contract, guaranteed. So like he's got to hit 25 home runs a year, which he still does. So like he's there, he can do it.
Yeah.
But it's like it's gonna be rough, you know. And Stanton did not have the sustained kind of success that Cabrera did for as long as Cabrera did.
Right.
So he's like, you know. Is Giancarlo Stanton a Hall of Famer? Probably not.
I don't think he is.
He's gonna be maybe the only 500 home run hitter not in the Hall of Fame that doesn't have steroid allegations.
Yeah.
Which is wild.
Yeah, that's pretty insane.
It's a different era of baseball.
It is.
I'll mention this here because we're already talking about guys like this, but Kyle Schwarber became the first player in history
to
finish the season with a sub 200 average.
That's my boy.
And 100 or more RBI.
That is my boy.
Man,
what a
just
season.
It's
a legendary season.
The absolute three true outcome king, Adam Dunn, eat your heart out.
Yeah. Just I've never seen a season like his, man.
Dunn in 2012.
Would I say it was fun to watch? No, but it was definitely something to watch.
Dunn in 2012 had a 204 average, 222 strikeouts, 105 walks, 41 home runs, and 96 RBI, which is the closest thing you're going to get to this season.
Yeah.
Schwarber, 197, 215 strikeouts, 126 walks, 104 RBI, 47 home runs. They're very similar seasons, honestly, which is actually pretty weird.
Yeah.
Dunn led the league in walks in 2012, right. But unfortunately for Kyle Schwarber, Juan Soto exists.
Unfortunately. So.
Juan Soto had 131 walks. I think, did Schwarber finish second? Like, I wouldn't be surprised if Schwarber finished second in walks. Yeah. Man, those two guys, I want to hear those two guys do a podcast. Just like Adam Dunn and Kyle Schwarber. No thoughts, only walks and dingers.
I'm all for the Kyle Schwarber podcast.
By the way, Soto 131, Schwarber 126, Olsen 104, Hap 99. Yep. That's the walks leaderboards. Yep. Insane.
what a year for Kyle Schwarber.
What an insane.
I talked about baseball it. Play.
By the way, it's not like the advanced stats think it was a good season. Schwarber's not good.
Well,
like.
God, I talked about it in the unreleased episode, and you know, when he's at leadoff, the Phillies win.
Sure.
They are when I mentioned it last week, they were 60-38 with him in the leadoff spot. Well, no, since putting him back in the leadoff spot, they were 60-38.
Yeah.
They win with him.
Listen, you can't deny it. That 206 batting average in the leadoff spot really
Look at the team going.
I know 346 on base percentage in the leadoff spot, which is still not amazing. Like 346 on base percentage is like a fine on base percentage. He walks. I mean, he does walk. He just doesn't get on base any other way. He gets home runs and walks and strikeouts. It is the ideal three true outcome season.
It is.
The only thing is he didn't lead the league in anything but strikeouts. Yeah. Because again, Soto led the league in walks, and then the home runs have been insane because the Braves and Dodgers.
Right.
Olsen 54. He's second. Olsen 54, Schwarber 47. Yep. So Schwarber finished second in home runs and second in walks.
Yep.
But first in strikeouts. And first by quite a bit. 215 to McMahon's 196.
And he had over 100 runs batted in too.
Yes, he had, we mentioned. A lot of guys over 100 runs batted in this year. So he finished ninth in RBIs. But still, like traditional stats, except for batting average, he did pretty well.
He had a good year.
But the batting average was bad.
Batting average nerds can suck it.
By the way, not even top 10 in on base percentage. That's Acuna, Freeman, Soto, Betts, Harper, Arias, Olsen, Lamont Wade Jr., Lars Nootbaar, and I won't say the rotting corpse of Christian Yelich. He's been a little better the last couple seasons, but
I'll say the rotting corpse of Christian Yelich.
Whatever's left of Christian Yelich.
There's something there.
Finished 10th in on-base percentage.
Yeah.
And that was still 15 points ahead of Kyle Schwarber as a leadoff hitter.
Yeah.
So, and Schwarber didn't, like, that's just as a leadoff hitter. Schwarber finished with a 344 on base percentage. He's not good, Pat. He's not. He hits the dingers. Listen, what do you want? Do you want to hear the horrible truth or do you want to see some dingers?
I'm here for the dingers and the walks. And, you know, he does what I need him to do. He's a leader. Yeah. He's a leader.
He's a clubhouse leader.
He's only missed the postseason once in his whole career.
That's insane.
Yeah.
I mean, that's nuts.
Yeah.
That's wild. What a career.
He's a winner.
I mean,
he's a stone cold winner.
Yeah. Wow. That I didn't even realize that. Yeah. That is kind of wild. 2019 Cubs was the only year that he did not make the playoffs.
He's the only player to have a home run in every postseason series you can hit a home run in.
Yes.
As well as the WBC. Yeah,
we did talk about that. I think we talked about that both in the last in last year's World Series episode and then also when the WBC came around. Yeah. He hit it there too. Yeah.
He's a winner.
You know, I can't deny it. He's a winner. And you know what? He and Bryce Harper seem to have a great time together.
Oh, 100%. That clubhouse is, you know? I'll get into that when we preview the series, but that clubhouse is fun.
Let's talk about, we just talked about him a moment ago, Joey Votto, one of the great first basemen of our era, was ejected, arguing balls and strikes on a call that he was absolutely correct on.
Yeah.
It was a ball. It was called a strike. He was sent back to the dugout. may or may not be his last game. Votto hasn't said. It's kind of been implied. He's the kind of guy who would do this kind of thing quietly. He has spent the last 3 or 4 years killing his batting average, his career batting average. He was a 3.45 hit hitter, 300, 400, 500 hitter, yep. I think, coming into 2022. Mm-hmm. And he's hit 205 and 203 the last two seasons, which is a bummer. You know, he, I think, has... He has an option year with a $7 million buyout with the Reds for 2024. Certainly the Reds aren't going to pay him $20 million on the option. This has been discussed by other shows, not really by us, but we've talked about it in our Slack. The only possibilities are that Votto signs with the Reds again for a discounted rate, or maybe there's an outside possibility that he signs with the Blue Jays. But I don't think he will. No. I don't think the Blue Jays are a real... I think it's an outside shot. Like,
after that speech he gave, I think he's done.
Yeah?
I think that's it. The speech he gave after that game, it was like a game, 2 games ago or something like that, but he gave a speech to the Cincinnati crowd, and I think... he's done.
The thing is like, it's tough to say, right? Because he may or may not be done. And that's the thing.
I think the Reds are done with him.
Maybe not. That's the thing. I agree with the perspective. I think he gives the speech because he knows that this might be his last game.
Yeah.
And he doesn't like, he wants to be like, hey, I want to give the speech so that all the Reds fans know. But like, it was his final Reds game. So it was the second to last series of the year. It feels within reason that he gives that speech to be like, if this is my last game as a Red, then I want to thank everybody for everything. But I think, they have to pay him $7 million either way.
Right.
You know, like, I don't think, Votto does not seem like a guy who is...
He doesn't really care about money.
Incredibly concerned about the money. Yeah. Like, yeah. He doesn't seem like a guy who's cares that much that he's going to, like, walk over whatever. So if they're paying him $7 million anyway, then toss him another million to actually, like, pay the buyout, $7 million, and then give him another million to play for the season, be a veteran leader, get a proper farewell tour, which, again, seems like something that Votto does not care that much about. But I can see him wanting to stay, and it'll sell Reds tickets. So I can see the Reds wanting to keep him to sell those tickets because this year people didn't know for sure that it was Votto's last season, but like next year, if it is his last season, that puts butts in seats. So I think from a business standpoint, the Reds will want to do it. And look, we talked about veteran leadership, right? Joey Votto is a veteran leader. The Reds are a good team and want to be a good team next year. Mm-hmm. It's good to have the veteran leadership. Obviously, they have other veteran leaders, but like aside from Votto, it's like Nick Senzel and Jonathan India are kind of the leaders there,
Yeah.
So, it's not like it's not exactly, and Tyler Stevenson, like it's a very young team. So it's good to have a vet leader there like Votto, who is essentially another coach. And on top of that, no, I had another thing, but I lost it.
You lost it.
But it makes just enough sense for them to keep him around, and continue to be. Oh, sorry. The other thing was, they intend to make the playoffs next year. If they make a World Series push, then they can win Votto a ring, which otherwise he had never had a chance to do. I mean, he had a couple of playoff appearances in his career, but not a ton of shots to like actually go deep. Which I think the 2024 Reds team, if they,
they make the right moves, they have a shot.
If they make the right moves, they have a shot, exactly.
Yeah.
And they have a great young core. So, like, all those sort of pieces together, the fact that he would be willing to come back, the fact that you need a vet presence, the fact that you can win him a ring, the fact that it's going to sell seats, I think the Reds will be willing to bring him back for one more season.
Yeah.
And let that be his final season. And hope that maybe he can have, some semblance of the Joey Votto that you used to get, and have like a properly decent season, let him have Albert Pujols season maybe. Mm-hmm. All on paper, it seems like the pieces are there for the reunion to happen for one final season. But I think if it's not that, then it's retirement. I don't think he signs with the Blue Jays, which is the only outside option. It's either the Reds sign him for one more season or he's done.
Yeah.
That's where I think. And that's how I'll be treating him in the sim if I end up with him, which I will, because no one wants Joey Votto to
like, agent.
He's not a fun player to agent. So it's like, great, I'll take the scraps. I take Votto, Reds GM. What are we doing?
Yeah.
Yeah. That is Joey Votto and his career. Let's talk about one more career. Actually, two more careers. Zach Greinke got a standing ovation at what may be his last start, or maybe like, man, Greinke, what a weird guy. Greinke, yeah. By the way, of the guys we've talked about so far, the only guy who had a positive baseball reference WAR this season, which was 0.8, 2.5 last year. He has signed a year-to-year contract with the Royals the last couple of years. The Royals are a bad team. Mm-hmm. So we could kind of use Zach Greinke. Does he come back as a reliever next year just to like, because he wants to? Like, honestly, just for fun? Like, listen, I would not put it past Zach Greinke to spend 5 more years as the majors as like an above average to elite reliever.
Yeah, that wouldn't shock me. I could like, see it.
I'm not going to say it's going to happen, but it feels within the realm of reason.
Yeah.
It's kind of what Smoltz did, right?
Yeah.
Like, Smoltz was 42 in that last season, but it was 2 seasons as a reliever at the end of his career.
Right.
He started. Who was the reliever that I'm thinking of? So somebody like, Smoltz in the middle of his career was a reliever. And then turned back into a starter.
Yes.
That's extra weird. But I could see Greinke. First of all, Greinke is not the least valuable player in the majors.
No. You know,
he's not even the least valuable player in the Royals rotation.
No.
That would be Jordan Lyles, who is a minus 1.3 WAR this year, almost Adam Wainwright bad.
He's pretty bad.
6-17. He's awful. He's so bad.
He's pretty bad.
Great immaculate grid player, by the way.
100%.
I don't know why Jordan Lyles on no matter what cross it is, less than 2%, and most usually less than 1%. Even if it's like Royals Orioles, I think Royals Orioles for him is like 2%.
Yeah.
It's insane. Greinke has all of the makings to like, if he wants to pitch next year, which I assume he does because he's Zach Greinke,
right?
I don't think he's going to stop pitching until his arm falls off.
No.
I think he'll come back next year, maybe as a starter, maybe as a reliever. But man, I mean, like, if Zach Greinke is a 45-year-old reliever, I, again, don't think anybody will be shocked.
No, I don't think that. It wouldn't shock me.
Jamie Moore, by the way, pitched till he was 49 as a starter, which is insane. That's insane.
He's a legend.
I mean, like, that number doesn't feel real.
That was Jamie Moore.
It's not like he started pitching old. He started pitching in 1986 at the age of 23.
Yep.
And he pitched till he was 49 in 2012. Insane career. Jimmy Moyer should be in the Hall of Fame just for longevity.
I have long argued this.
Like, just nobody else. Nobody else is going to do it. It's in 25 seasons. And that's missing a couple seasons in the middle, too. Mm-hmm. He missed 2011. He missed 1992.
Mm-hmm.
I think Zach Greinke wants to do that. I think Zach Greinke is going to try his hardest to play another 5 years. Who's going to have him? Listen, it's not like the Royals are going to be good next year.
Yeah. Well, you know, that Central Division. You never know.
That's true. I mean, you expect the Guardians to turn it around. You don't expect the White Sox to, but I think the White Sox certainly want to.
I think the White Sox are trading off their assets.
Yeah, that's possible. The Tigers, I think that rebuild is coming to a close.
Yes.
They finished, you know, just they're the second place team in the AL Central, which is, you know, very much first loser, especially in that division. But like they, you know, that rebuild feels over. Or close to over. The Guardians were supposed to be good this year. That feels within the cards. And the Twins are the same team as they were this year, next year, in pretty much. So I think the Royals don't really make sense to want to go and win next year. Mm-hmm. Even if that means wasting Bobby Witt Jr.'s career, I don't think they're necessarily poised to do anything next year. So bring Greinke back, even if he's a 5 ERA pitcher, or again, probably a solid reliever.
Yeah,
and like, of all the people to be willing to do that, man, Greinke really feels like, yeah, it'd be fine to be a reliever. I'll do that, I guess. That's fine. Why not?
Yeah.
So, that's Greinke. And then the last one, not a player, a manager, Buck Showalter, out as Mets manager, and essentially announced that he wasn't fired. He was told that if he doesn't resign, he'll be fired.
Yeah, so he was fired. He was fired.
Yeah. You know. You know, not the biggest shock, considering how disappointing the Mets season.
Yeah.
And even, like, last season was disappointing in a different way. This season was disappointing in the most traditional disappointment. Like,
yeah.
You've went from 100-win team to fourth in the NL East.
Right.
Like, that's, and like, by adding great starters, like, just every part of their season was a disappointment. Makes sense to kick Buck Showalter to the curb.
100%.
My question is, do we think Showalter goes out and seeks another job? Now, reminder, he managed with the Orioles till 2018. And then came back to manage for the Mets. But he never, unlike Bruce Bochy with the Rangers, Bochy retired, right, and then came back out of retirement. Tony La Russa similarly retired, came back out of retirement. Showalter either couldn't find a job or wasn't looking that hard. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't know for sure, but Showalter never officially retired. So when he came back, and he's only 67, which is not, you know, it's old, but not like that old for a manager. It's, you know, it's like,
yeah,
reasonably old for a manager, but like enough to be like, you could have 5 more years in him, you know? So do you think Showalter looks for a job this offseason, ends up with another team, or is he going to retire?
I think he's done.
Yeah.
My gut tells me he's done, and I don't blame him. You're old. I think the game is passing him by. I don't think he's a good manager in the modern day game. I don't think, honestly, I don't think he's ever been a good manager.
He wasn't that great a manager when he left managing.
Just look at the wild card game where he refused to put Zach Britton in.
Zach Britton. I mean, we're on the same page there. Yeah. That's exactly what I was thinking of. Yeah. He managed those Yankees teams, and he managed a couple of really great teams. Like,
yeah.
He managed the Yankees teams right before those Yankees teams.
Yeah.
He managed the Diamondbacks teams right before that Diamondbacks team. He's really great at shepherding a team to their best era.
Yeah.
Except for the Orioles, who he shepherded into their worst era.
Right.
They're on the come up as well. I don't know. I mean, you know, I don't want to impugn Buck Showalter's career by saying he's a bad manager. He maybe isn't. That's a whole other discussion. Is he going to come back next year?
Probably not.
I mean, who wants him, you know?
Yeah.
Unless the White Sox hire him, which is not out of the realm of possibility.
That would be very on brand.
Yeah, exactly. That's incredibly on brand for the White Sox to hire Buck Showalter, so I think that's within reason.
Yeah.
And otherwise, nobody else. By the way, Buck Showalter said that he has never spoken to David Stearns.
Fun.
Which is, I mean, what a great way to run that ball club, right?
What a team.
That's wild. It was apparently it was Stearns' decision to fire him, and which, according to Steve Cohen, Showalter has never spoken to David Stearns. That is not, I mean, like, wow. Meanwhile.
Meet the Mets. Oh. What a team.
Yeah.
What a team.
Stearns, by the way, we didn't mention, was announced this week as the president of baseball operations. But you would think, like, I don't know. It's tough, right? Like, Showalter obviously has a relationship with Conan, doesn't have a relationship with Stearns. But you would think that when Stearns is coming in, he would at least have a conversation with Showalter to see if he's the right guy.
Right.
And, like, at least like a cordial conversation. Like a curt, like, you know you're not going to do anything. You know he's not the right guy. But, like, it's the courteous thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the right thing to do to be like, hey, let's have a conversation. Let's see if you can be on the same page as us. Because he's under contract for another year. Because that's one thing, too. Like, the worst thing that you can that like the worst case scenario is you bite the bullet and keep Showalter for the last year of his contract.
Yeah.
But maybe, you know, I think probably the biggest assumption is that Craig Counsell's contract is ending this year. He doesn't have a contract. Mm-hmm. Stearns is coming from the Brewers. Counsell has had solid managerial career with the Brewers. Yeah. Obviously has a relationship with Stearns already. Right. I think that really makes a lot of sense. You know, we'll see what happens. But to me, that seems like the reason to fire Buck instead of keeping him around for one more year.
Yeah.
Especially because that's the thing. The players like him. That's the thing. He's a player's manager. At least their best player likes him. because I know that Buck and Lindor have a good relationship.
Right.
So firing him at this point seems like it has to be like because you want to bring somebody in right away and you know who that guy is. Because otherwise it feels like keeping him around for the season when like he wouldn't come back anyway, you know? Like, yeah. I don't know. He's not so bad that he made the Mets bad this year. Like, because they were great last year, you know? And that was also, again, a disappointment in a different way. But he's not so bad that he made the Mets the fourth place team. Like, there was other stuff going on there.
Oh, but anyway, 100%.
I don't know. Anyway, that's Buck Showalter. That's, you know, maybe the end of a maybe great career. That's such a weird, like... We've had such weird, like, you know, Bochy too. And Bochy had a great season this year.
Yeah.
But Bochy did not do anything for poorly for his reputation like Tony La Russa did.
Right.
But like so many of these like guys who feel like they belong in a former era coming back out of retirement.
It's weird.
It's been a weird managerial era because we're coming off of an era of guys who were like catchers who had no major, like no coaching experience at all.
Well, like,
right?
you look at the best managers of that era. You know, you had La Russa, you had Charlie Manuel, you had Bochy,
right.
Joe Maddon, Terry Francona, who's also retiring.
Yeah, who's also retiring.
Yep. And
Francona, we didn't talk a bunch about this year either because the Guardians have not been much to watch. But Francona had, you know, been very quiet about whether or not he's retiring or not. It was pretty assumed within Cleveland circles, and then finally announced like last week that he was retiring, and you know this would be the end for him. And like, but yeah, you're right. And then, but like, there's that era. But then like, there's this this sort of current era of bringing these guys back in between those two eras. So basically, right. In between Tony La Russa's first era and second era.
Yeah, pretty much.
The you know, from like 2012 to 2020 or whatever, the trend was hiring guys who had no coaching experience at any level.
Yep.
And had just been major league catchers. You have Brad Ausmus, you have Mike Matheny, you have David Ross.
Should also mention Gabe Kapler, who was just fired by the Giants.
Yep, Gabe Kapler. Yeah, so like a lot of guys like that was that sort of trend for nearly a decade. Who's the guy who... the Phillies manager who was with the Yankees, I forgot his name.
Rob Thompson.
No. He was the Yankees manager for years.
Oh,
and then
Joe
he came
Girardi.
To the Phillies legacy. Joe Girardi, thank you. I was like, Joe something.
I was going to say, because Rob Thompson's a Phillies manager. He won championships with the Yankees.
Yeah. When I didn't remember if Girardi replaced Kapler or Kapler replaced Girardi. Girardi replaced Kapler, yeah. Girardi, another guy who was, you know, he coached briefly, but he was basically a manager right after he was a player.
Yeah.
So like that sort of mid era of guy. And I think Girardi was the mold for that because Girardi had success with the Yankees and people were like, oh, well, let's try that. Let's get a guy who played catcher for us. And it didn't work out most of the time. Mike Matheny was awful. David Ross. Cubs fans hate David Ross right now.
I've noticed.
Yeah.
Which is wild because the dude won you a World Series as a player.
I know. Like, and that's what they say. They're like, listen, like, I appreciate what he did for the World Series, blah, 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 but like, he's got to go.
Yeah.
Like, hey, you know, you're not wrong. So it's interesting that like, that's what sort of capped those eras. Cause it was like, it seemed like the trend was going to be like, you know, promoting guys. And then there has been a bit of that, Pedro Grifol and Skip Schumacher and, Mike Schilt was the, he came through the minors with the Cardinals and then got promoted to major league manager. And I wish he had stuck around. He's now, I think, third base at the Padres, but like there's been a lot more of that. And I thought that was going to be more of a trend, but it's been a lot of guys coming back after having left. And it's an odd trend. It feels, and you know, Bochy might have a great season, but like Bochy went out kind of on top. Like it's such a, and so did La Russa. La Russa, like Showalter didn't go out on top. So it makes sense for him to come back, but La Russa went out, like with a World Series championship,
he did.
Retired,
yep.
Got elected to the Hall of Fame,
yep.
And then came back.
Yep.
Like, what a nuts career! It's insane,
it's wild.
So anyway, that is the end of Buck Showalter's career, probably. The Gabe Kapler firing, also we mentioned there, and I think Terry Francona retiring as well. Yep. So sort of. Get that all into one. Kapler, what's do we think Kapler gets a job?
Oh, Kapler will find a job.
Yeah.
Well, I think so. There's like
a managing job.
I think he's the next Padres manager.
Really?
I think Bob Melvin's gone because there's talk.
I won't be surprised if Bob Melvin's gone. Although they did kind of turn the season around at the end, they might have saved themselves.
But there's like a disconnect between Bob Melvin and the front office, which was like an article that got put out. I wouldn't be surprised if Kapler's the next Padres manager.
Yeah, and Kapler feels very like controllable
Padres-y.
By front office.
Yeah.
He feels like a guy like who doesn't really like do a lot of like, I mean, not to say managers that have some podcast relationship with front offices don't do thinking for themselves, but Kapler feels like a guy who doesn't do a ton of thinking. Like he feels like a guy who like very much is like, cool, I'm in the organization. The general manager is who I report to. He told me what to do, I'll do it.
Yeah.
So I could see that, although, you know, the Padres front office is a whole other mess.
Yeah. And if it's not the Padres, it'll probably be the Guardians he goes to.
Interesting.
We
might have to have a whole like discussion about these in the off season. Cause there are, Pedro Grifol's not getting fired,
but
for some reason. But like, there's a lot of, you know, there's a couple that have opened up already and a couple that seem like they might open up. You know, Cardinals, for example, might be parting ways with Ali Marmol. Who knows? We'll see. I don't know. That seems like a good segment. Let's talk a little bit about some player accolades here as the season has wrapped up. Luis Arraez, unsurprisingly, is the batting champ.
First player to ever win it consecutively in two different leagues.
Really?
Yep.
Huh. I mean, that's not like super surprising, but it's a little surprising.
Yeah.
I guess LeMahieu wasn't that great the season. He was good, but like not batting champ when he came into the Yankees.
DJ didn't do it until his second year.
Oh yeah, and he was batting champ like 4 years before we came to the Yankees.
Yeah.
So I guess that
he won the batting title in 2016, and then his second year he hit.
So he won it in both leagues, but not consecutive.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And then who was the Justin Morneau not winning batting title in Minnesota? Was that also because Justin Morneau, by the way, this is a great
Morneau did not win a batting title in Minnesota.
Gotcha. Yeah. This is a great immaculate square grid, by the way, is Justin Morneau Rockies 300 batting average.
Yep.
And Minnesota also, but Rockies especially, because nobody thinks about that dude ever playing for the Rockies, and he did it in both of his seasons there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What a weirdly good player who nobody ever thinks about ever.
I love Justin Morneau.
Michael Kadire, by the way, also similarly, similar career trajectory as Justin Morneau, but also had a batting title in Colorado in his second season there, never hit 300 in Minnesota. Yep. yeah, these guys are like the same player.
Yep.
I mean, like,
except one has an MVP.
Well, yeah, and Kadire played outfield and Morneau played first base, but like
Kadire played like all over the place. He played third too.
Yeah, but he's mostly a corner outfielder. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. And then the AL, it was Corey Seager who beat Yandy Diaz by less than
a sliver.
It was like they're both 330, and then it's like whatever the rounding is what Seager wins on. And he, by the way, he only had 532 plate appearances. The minimum is 502.
Mm-hmm.
He really, really by a hair, Corey Seager, who is gonna, you know, be in the MVP conversation with 532 plate appearances. But an incredible season from him. So like, it's not like he doesn't deserve to be in the MVP conversation, but like he really feels like the guy he was with LA, right?
Yeah.
Like he's going to play most of the season, but not all of it, and give you MVP performance. And that's what he's doing. But like, he's still also like, he's Troy Tulowitzki, right? Like he's speaking of great Rockies, like, yeah, dude, great player. Can he play?
Right.
And when he plays, he's great. And then the Braves tied the record for most home runs by a team.
Yep. Yay, Atlanta.
What a shock.
What a season.
What a season for you can't discount the season of Ronald Acuña Jr.
No,
who became a 40-70 man this week.
Even if he might be cheating, you can't discount it. Even if he's stat padding.
Every reference to the Braves and Dodgers cheating is meant as satire and satirical. Not as literal.
Not literal.
Yes,
we're not breaking anything major here. We're not in that business.
That's true. Yeah, we're not.
I'm not breaking shocking news from my office chair in the middle of Bumble, Pennsylvania.
I think I said this. I said this a couple times. Is like, I am not saying the Braves are cheating. Maybe like that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that if in 3 years John Boy puts out a breakdown of how the Braves cheated in 2023, I won't be shocked.
No.
You know what I'm saying? Like that's all I'm saying. Is it definitely happening? I'm who's to say?
No one knows. You know, could be, could not. You know?
If somebody proves it happened, I'm not gonna be like,
I'm not gonna argue it.
Really?
I mean, I'll certainly be the first to storm Truist Park.
As a part owner, right?
Yeah, as part owner, because I've bought a share of the Atlanta Braves.
I own the Atlanta Braves.
I did. Yeah. I'm waiting for my certificate to come. Yeah, I'm waiting for my certificate
really?
To come. Yeah.
I didn't. That's awesome. I knew you were talking about it. I didn't realize you actually did it. That's really cool.
Screw it. Why not?
That's really funny. That's incredible.
I can't wait. Dude, I can't wait to have ownership power and trade Ronald Acuña for nothing.
That's incredible. But yeah, man, 41 home runs, 73 stolen bases, 217 hits, 149 runs, like 1013 OPS. What can you say?
MVP. Well, you know, some would argue not an MVP, but he's probably winning MVP.
He's probably winning MVP. You know, Mookie Betts had a really, really good season, and that nobody can ever take that away from him.
Freddie Freeman had a really, really good season.
Yeah, I mean, and talking about teammates, Olsen had a really, really good season. You know, like there's a lot of guys who
are winning
MVP this year. A lot of guys. I was looking up Betts' number because Betts hit like his first. He had 39 home runs this season. Yep. Almost got to 40. He was having an incredible season.
Yeah, the power just fell off.
Yeah, but it was really there for a while. And like, it's not the power totally fell off, right? He still had 40 doubles, and he still finished with a .580 slugging percentage. Like, it's still a great season from Mookie Betts. And I won't. I mean, like, again, I won't be surprised if Betts ends up winning MVP, because Betts also, the thing Betts did is also like he played second base and shortstop at an elite level, which Acuna was not the best right fielder, although, you know, how much does that matter? Well, it doesn't matter for like, if you kind of think it's a virtual tie, then maybe the defense becomes a tiebreaker, right? Like it's stuff like that happens.
Right.
So who knows? There's certainly a possibility that, it gets really, I think it's going to be tight. Like it's not going to be a runaway, but I do think Acuna is going to be.
Yeah. And this will be the second time that Mookie finishes second to a Brave, because he finished second in 2020 to Freddie Freeman,
his new pal Freddie Freeman,
new buddy.
And we'll have like a full, I'm sure, MVP, Cy Young, and awards conversation and soon as well. As we, I don't know, we'll find time during the postseason to talk about awards as well. Maybe next week if there's a late news, we'll just do that and ALDS previews. Or maybe we'll do a ALDS preview episode and then a regular Sunday episode. I don't know. I know I'm highly promising here for a guy who didn't release the episode that was recorded last week. But
censoring greatness right over here.
You know? Pat got too controversial, and I was just
too controversial over Shohei Ohtani.
When he went on that 10-minute MAGA rant in the middle, I was like, maybe we shouldn't release this, Pat.
Listen, man, shut it down.
When he started talking about how Joe Biden deserves to be impeached.
Joe Byron. Bing bong.
Joe Byron. By the way, other statty, beautiful statty seasons that'll be great for your immaculate grid. Bobby Witt had a 30-40 season. Again, very quietly. I was saying kind of jokingly, but kind of seriously, that Bobby Witt season feels like what Dodgers fans think Ronald Acuna season was.
Yeah.
Where like you're talking about stat padding, like 30-40 season playing for the Royals, like what are you
doing?
Like,
almost had a 30-50 season. He was one stolen base away from
49 stolen bases. Yeah.
And he led the AL triples.
Which is what Trout did his rookie year too, right? Trout was, I think, was it 30? Oh no, exactly 30 home runs and 49 stolen bases. Yeah,
I will give, like, he seems, well, no, his fielding was still pretty rough, but he got a little bit better fielding-wise.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, he's, you know.
I'm going to pet.
His fielding had been adequate enough that, like, at worst, he's a second baseman, you know? Like,
I'm going to say it now. I'm penciling in Bobby Witt for MVP next year in the AL.
You know, it's fully within reason. I could certainly see it. You got to think there's a healthy Judge, and you know, like maybe a semi-healthy Seager too, and then Julio Rodriguez.
But Witt is 23 and he's doing this right now.
No, I agree. Well, I mean, Hurod is 22 as well.
Yeah, they're both young. They're going to be the faces to the AL for the next 10 years.
That's what we're definitely seeing for the next decade at least. Is Hurod and Bobby Witt as MVP contenders for quite a bit. The whole Orioles crew.
Oh yeah.
They're like
Gunnar Holiday Adley,
exactly. Like those guys are all also gonna be like in theory at least. Gunnar this year is like I think second in position player war.
Yeah. Well, he's winning rookie of the year.
Yeah, for sure. Oh no, they didn't win last year, right? It was Hurod last year.
Last year was Hurod, and then
because I thought for a second it was gonna be back to back rookies of the year. But no, Hurod just overtook it last year.
Yeah.
But yeah, Gunnar, I mean, undoubtedly this year. There's no
question.
I think argument. There's no argument for anybody else.
Yeah.
Like, what a great season for him. Kyle Tucker hit 29 home runs and 30 stolen bases. I find to be worth mentioning because Tucker on the last game of the season hit
the ump screwed him.
It was what it was originally called a triple and an error, then called a triple and a fielder's choice, then called an inside the park home run. then once again called a triple and a fielder's choice. I believe there was nobody else on base, so I don't know how you can really call it. I guess fielder's choice because of the fielder they threw it to, but like, that's a home run, man. Oh, if there's nobody on base and the guy gets from first to home and there's no like clear, like true error where the ball gets thrown away, how is that not an inside the park home run? What are we talking about here?
Right.
Like, you know, I don't know. We'll see. They still might overturn and like re-overturn it. But 29 home runs, 30 stolen, still a great season. Also his first season in the last three to be like, he had 30 home runs exactly in 2021, 30 exactly in 2022. And then if this stands, 29 in 2023, which is, you know, kind of a bummer for him. That was annoying. Also, by the way, Francisco Lindor, 30 stolen bases, sorry, 31 stolen bases, 31 home runs. He had a 31-31 season.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, the stolen base numbers, obviously, you know, I'm sure there's going to be more data on this coming, but the rule changes certainly seem to have done what they were hoping to do, which is increase stolen base numbers throughout the league.
Yeah.
Which, you know, speaking of which, Esteban Ruiz broke the record for AL rookie stolen bases by an AL rookie. Kenny Lofton had the record with 66 and Esteban Ruiz stole 67. He might have stole another one in the game. I know when he stole his 67th, I saw it. I think 67. Now he's a guy who did the rules do it, or was he just always that guy? Cause that's the guy he is. So I don't know if that's like which of those two things that is, but certainly still impressive.
Definitely. Definitely.
By the way, also Julio Rodriguez, 32 home runs, 37 stolen bases, a lot of 30-30 guys this year.
Yeah, there were. Well, speaking, I mean, with the bigger bases, you know,
speaking to the base, exactly. Speaking to the stolen base, like those rule changes, it makes sense that there'd be more 30-30 guys. I think we were talking in Slack about, like, are we going to see a lot more 40-40 guys? Like, is that going to happen? And based on the number of 30-30 guys we saw this year, I do think it's like, it seems inevitable for there to be more 40-40 guys.
Right.
You know, just like, I mean, especially because, like, Hurod is so young.
Yeah.
And he just, you know, he's right there. Like, he has every capability of, he stole 37 bases this year and hit 32 home runs. He could very well steal those, get to 40-40 next season when he's 23 years old.
Right.
So like, I would not be shocked if Hurod or Witt, again, who is 23, if both of them finish with 40-40 seasons next year. I think it's well within the realm of reason.
Yeah.
And then the last news thing, which is going to take us into our wild card previews, the AL West, man.
What a race.
I mean, like, truly, I don't think I've ever seen such an exciting to the last day race for standings ever.
Yeah.
Like, the you know, because there's always been like, oh, like there's one spot for three teams or whatever, but it's always like the third wild card or something like that. This was the Rangers, the Astros, and the Mariners all fighting for who gets first place in the division and gets a bye, who gets second place in the division, finishes with the second or third wild card,
right,
has to play the wild card series, and who misses the playoffs.
Yep. And like, the unfortunate,
the stakes have never been higher.
The unfortunate loser of all this was the team the that Seattle I Mariners. Predicted would win out.
Well, and yeah, exactly. And you, and there we go. That Pat, that's why I didn't want to listen to the episode, is so you didn't have to be embarrassed by us hearing you say the Mariners will win out. You know, it's like, yeah, so they lost two of three. They just got swept by the Rangers, and then two of three from the Astros. And then again, they lost one of three, or two of four from the Rangers, I believe. No, sorry. They took three of four from the Rangers here to, you know, as their last act of vengeance, take the Rangers out of the lead and put them into the wild card spot. What a man.
Yeah. Insane. Just absolutely insane.
And sorry, once again, the Rangers, the Rangers did lose today. So yes, yeah. The Mariners literally in their last act of the season kept the Rangers out of the
Funny. The Rangers went and had a full on celebration last night when they clinched a playoff spot, and the Astros kept it classy and had a champagne toast. Got what they needed to do done today, won the division, and then went wild.
Yeah, exactly. And like, and I mean, especially, you know, and I get it. And you know, and Bochy obviously is a great manager. And like, there's a lot of that stuff. And these are all like young guys, a lot of whom who haven't been there yet, like before. I think besides like Seager, has Semien ever made a playoffs? Maybe with the A's?
I feel like he did with the Blue Jays.
No, with the A's. 3 years in a row, they made the wild card game.
That's right.
And that includes the COVID season. So it was a wild card game every time, which is what they're dealing with now is a wild card series. But like, that's basically, I think Adolis Garcia might've been a Cardinal, made like a postseason appearance with the Cardinals once. But like for the most part, it's their pitchers, are veterans. You know, you have, Heaney and Uvalde and John Montgomery and Max Scherzer on the IL and Jacob DeGrom on the IL, and Aroldis Chapman. But like for the hitters, there's not like a lot of, you know, so it makes sense to have this big celebration and like, especially coming off of not having spent a bunch of money the last offseason and done really poorly and then coming and turning it around with a new manager with all that stuff. I get it. But the Astros have been there before a lot. And like you said, got it done and, you know, took the division on the last day of the season to then like, yeah, I mean, to get a bye too is the thing. Like it's huge. It was, like I said, this is the biggest stakes I think we've ever seen in a division race to end the season. And a big part of it is because of that extra wild card spot that exists. And the Blue Jays, by the way, were in that race as well to the end. They had a wild card spot, but like to the end, it was unclear whether the Blue Jays would be the second or third wild card because you just like, they still had to play the games out. They were, did they have the same number of wins as the, no, they lost today. So they were one win behind, but if they had won today, they would have the exact same number of wins and lost the exact same record as the Rangers and the Astros. So the Blue Jays had a big part in the AL West race, even to the end of it. And the AL wildcard race, just a wild wild finish. So, you know, I don't love the third wild card. I don't love the new wild card system. It's not my favorite thing in the world. But it did do this, and this was great.
It gave us a really great ending to the season.
Yeah. And also the Cubs blew their wild card spot. The Cubs were holding on to the second wild card for quite a bit.
Yeah, that was a bummer. They had like a 96% chance of winning it.
Yeah, I know, it's great. Beginning of September. Yeah, so like just like, you know, they lost to the Diamondbacks a couple games. They lost like, and that's the worst part too for them, is they lost a lot of them to teams that they were competing against for those spots, like the Diamondbacks and the Phillies and the Marlins. The Phillies, I mean, kind of already clinched it up, and the Brewers as well. And then the Pirates came around and played spoiler a bunch too in this race,
right?
It was, you know, it really felt even a week ago that the Cubs like had been giving up too much ground. I live in Chicago, as you know, and am a Cardinals fan, as everybody knows. And so I see a lot of Cubs fans, and on Wednesday nights I host trivia at a bar that's like filled with Cubs fans. It's all like Cubs fans there. They you know, people come to watch the game, the owners, everybody's a Cubs fan. So I was watching the game on Wednesday where they lost to the Braves. And Ronald Acuna got a 70 stolen base, so he was celebrating because he got his 70 stolen base.
Yeah.
So they had to watch that. And they
were throwing a fit during it.
No, actually, they weren't. Actually, they were all like, I was like, maybe they were.
No, they were complaining about the 2-minute long video that they stopped the game to play, which I honestly don't blame them.
Yeah, yeah. Cubs fans, like, in general were, but at this bar, it was like, you know, they were, like, upset, but they were more upset about the season clearly being through than they were about. Like, I was like, hey, you gotta admit it's cool, and they were like, yeah, it is cool. I don't know, maybe if I wasn't there they would have been more complaining, but I was like, hey man, that was cool to see though, right? It's like, yeah. You know, you gotta admit when you see something like greatness like that.
Right.
And then Yeah, so that night the Cubs lost and the Marlins won, which put them in a virtual tie, but the Marlins have the tiebreaker. So they took the Cubs out and they didn't get it back since. And it was just like, it just felt like that was what was going to happen coming into like the last part of the last couple of weeks of the season. But I, as a Cardinals fan, like I was so concerned that the Cubs would make the playoffs in the worst Cardinals season I've ever seen in my life. Right. Like I can't have both of those. I can't have the Cardinals lose 90 plus games and the Cubs make the playoffs in the same season. So right. The fact that the Cubs at least didn't make the playoffs, like gives me a little bit of solace.
Yeah,
and if the Cardinals have another, I mean, like, I'm starting to get worried. Like, people are getting in my head about it, because I've been very adamant the Cardinals are not going to have another bad season. Like, they don't do that; it's not a thing they do. But like, boy, there are other recent teams I can think of that had a bunch of good seasons and then had like two or three 90 loss seasons. The Phillies, right? Like,
yeah.
But like, I have to reassure myself. I mean, I have to reassure myself. And if you hate the Cardinals, skip another 30 seconds. I have to reassure myself essentially that like the Cardinals as an organization and as an organizational philosophy for a long time have been better than what the Phillies organizational philosophy was in 2011. Like it's just, you know, those the Cubs organizational philosophy in 2013, like it just always has been. The last 20 years of organizational philosophy for the Cardinals has been better than what we know the organizational philosophies for like the Phillies and the Cubs and the current Rockies and like, you know, stuff like that have been for some time. So it's within reason. It's within the realm of possibility. But like, you know, I don't think it's going to happen. I think, you know, and like they also don't want to waste Goldie and Arenado, who are, you know,
yeah,
two of the great players of their era. So anyway, sorry, I talked a bunch about the Cardinals today. But yeah, the Cubs blew the wild card, which is great for me, bad for Cubs fans. But let's talk about those wild card series, Pat. We've already had what's essentially a full episode. It's time for now what's probably going to be another at least half episode. But that's fine. This is what we're here for. This is what we're made for. We started early tonight. So
yeah, We're built for this.
Let's talk first about the Rays and Rangers series coming, because that was the one that we were sort of most unsure about coming into the weekend. This is a Rays home game because the Rays won 99 games and a home series, rather. Man. You know, the Rays, when the Rays lost their two best players for the season, I know you and I on the show were like, yeah, it feels like they might be taking a step back. And
they still kept it close.
Maybe like half a step.
Yeah.
You know, like I think if those guys don't miss time for the reasons they're missing time, the disparate reasons, the Rays maybe win the division with 102 wins and the Orioles maybe finish, you know, or like 100 wins and the Orioles finish in second with like 99 wins or whatever. Right. Like,
yeah,
I think there's a very real chance that those two guys going down did cost them those, you know, two pivotal games. I'm sure there has been a Rays Orioles season series since then that the Rays dropped two of three on, you know, or something like that. It feels like that might be the difference maker. Is that the difference maker going into here the postseason? Look, Yandy Diaz has very clearly stepped up, has been their best player this season. You know, Josh Lowe is a really good player. Isaac Paredes, like they have a lot of really good, strong hitters. Harold Ramirez, their pitching, you know, has gotten a lot out of Phillies legend Zach Eflin, Tyler Glasnow, obviously. Like they've got the pieces there, but certainly losing those big pieces is the kind of thing that gets more exposed here on the playoff stage.
Right. And I mean, just looking at what they're going to go, I mean, rotation wise, game one, they're going to pitch Glasnow. Game two, Zach Eflin. And if needed, game three would be Aaron Civale.
Yeah.
It's going to be rough not having Shane out there for that first game.
Absolutely, yeah. But, I mean, and, you know,
not that, like, Tyler Glasnow's a bad pitcher.
But even, like, looking at the... No, I agree. Tyler Glasnow, like, you, especially when you want to make a deep playoff run, it's nice to have Tyler Glasnow be your number two, you know, like that's kind of what you want. And to not have that is definitely like going to be frustrating. I don't know why I said that with like a British accent, frustrating. But similarly for the Rangers, right? Like, they're probably going to be going out there with Jordan Montgomery, Nathan Eovaldi, and like Dane Dunning, right? Like something like that. You know, and to not have Max Scherzer and Jacob deGrom both, like, that's, you know, it's a similar situation is what I'll say. Like, they definitely are missing, both teams are missing big guns. Now, the Rangers hitting, I mean, it's on par, but the Rangers have Corey Seager, and Seager feels like the difference maker. I think that might be what it hinges on. If Seager has a good three games, that's what I'll call. If Seager has a good three games, the Rangers win 2 of 3. If Seager has a bad three games, then the Rays win 2 of 3.
Yeah, I agree. I think the Rangers are taking this series.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to have I don't think the Rays are going to have, number one, the fan support they need.
Well, hey, listen, they're moving to a new stadium, so the fans maybe know, right?
About that in the unreleased episode too.
That's true. That's a whole other discussion that we should have gotten in this one. But yeah, the Rays with their whole new stadium, maybe fans gonna, you know, it's like the breakup effect. I forget what exactly it's called, but like when you're about to break up with a girl, like suddenly she's the most beautiful woman in the world and you can't think of how to break up with her. So they'll do the same thing with the Trop. They'll be like, well, now that we're getting a new thing, we got to come see the Trop one last time. So maybe that's what they get. Maybe that's how they get all the fan support. But yeah, I don't know. I think I get what you're saying, but man, they're still the Rays, you know? Like,
they are. They're a good team, but like, I think the lack of like not having those two stars is going to hurt.
Yeah. I agree.
I just think the Rangers lineup is deeper right now.
Yeah.
And better. Like, I take Corey Seager over everyone on the Rays.
I guess that's what I'm hitting it on Seager, right? Because like otherwise, I think they kind of match up pretty well. If you take out Seager and Diaz, which is not a fair, like it's not even on both sides, right? Which is why the Rangers get the edge. But if you take out Seager and Diaz, it's pretty similar.
Yeah.
So like, that's why it's kind of tough, because they're pretty similar teams aside from the best hitter on each side, and the best hitter on one side is quite a bit better than the best hitter on the other side. So it really hinges on, I think, Seager specifically. Like, it's this team makes it to the division series on Seager's back, or it doesn't at all.
I would agree.
But who knows? And that's the thing too, is that like, the
wild card rounds are so random that
the wild card rounds are random. Happen. Yeah, but the Rays are a better team, right? Like like just by record, the Rays have more wins. Like, so like they're obviously doing something right, and they've been there quite a bit and know what they're doing. And obviously Bruce Bochy, but like, how much has the game passed Bruce Bochy by, right? Bruce Bochy hasn't been in a playoff atmosphere since like 2017. Kevin Cash was there last year, right? So like, and Cash is a good manager, right? And then Bochy is the one who, and management, those are the things that really get exposed in the playoffs, is a bad manager and you know, holes that have been plugged well over a full season or a half season, as they were with McClanahan and Franco. Those kinds of things also get exposed. So it's like, those are the two big things. And those are the things that it seems like both teams have had, right? And so the Rays finishing with a better record, getting the home series, I might give them the edge, but Corey Seager also is really good. He's so good. So like, that's, like I said, is the difference maker. Okay. I said Corey Seager's difference maker like five different times now. So let's talk about the other American League series. We'll go to that next. Jays Twins, which feel like two teams that I've heard shockingly little about this season.
Right.
We just have not.
I mean, the Twins are AL Central merchants, and the Jays, like, they've quietly put up a good season.
Yeah. Now, yeah, and again, there's obviously the fact that the Twins get to play the AL Central, so that pads their standings. But their record is 87-74. Their Pythagorean is 93-68. So they actually underplayed their Pythagorean. The Blue Jays 89-72 they've matched the Pythagorean exactly 89-72. So the Twins might be a better team. They're just such a quiet team, and they have, you know, they also have guys on the IL, Correa, Lewis, and Gallo. I don't know if they're going to be back in time for the playoffs, because those start in a couple of days, right? So again, like, if they don't get
Tuesday.
If they don't get Carlos Correa back by Tuesday, then they're hosed, you know.
Yeah, so it's gonna be trouble.
What the official word is, when push comes to shove, next Tuesday Correa will be out there. Now, is he going to be fully healthy? They said he's not going to be 100%. So yeah, taking this tendon strain is going to help his heel a noticeable amount. So it is the foot, it finally happened. The foot finally came to roost on Carlos Correa. We've been waiting all season.
Yep, it happened. It took long enough, but it
took long enough.
He finally got it.
Royce Lewis similarly is a hamstring strain, so they're not sure if he'll be back by Tuesday or not. Buxton just came back, so it's like it's tough because like these guys are not at 100%, and the Blue Jays, as much as they can be, right? Like they are like they've all been pretty healthy, or at the very least are all playing here at the end of the season,
right?
So you know, aside from whatever is wrong with Alec Manoa, they're you know the guys that they are, so. I think that's the difference here. I think the Twins are probably actually a better team, but they come in.
They're injured right now.
Yeah, they're not the team they are. So I think that's the edge for the Blue Jays, and the Blue Jays come out of the series. Probably, were they all sweeps last year?
all of them except for the Mets.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So.
Yeah. I feel like, I don't know, because I look at the Jays pitching right now, and I like the Jays. The options the Jays can throw out in game one and two better than
agreed.
The Twins. Like Gausman, Berrios, I assume,
will be game Bassett. One,
game two.
I mean,
or
like
Bassett.
Yeah, or I mean,
you
even.
Say
I mean,
Kikuchi.
Like, yeah, I think they have five guys who could all pitch the second game of this series. So like, or four guys who could, right? Like they have five guys who could all pitch at any point as starters in this series, which is a great place to be.
Their bullpen hasn't been bad either. I mean, especially since getting Jordan Hicks and Genesis Cabrera.
Right.
Like, they turned those two dudes around majorly.
I forgot we traded them Genesis Cabrera.
Yeah.
I forgot that was a separate deal. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. I think they come out on top here, you know, and like, again, like the Twins don't have the rotation, and that probably would get them either way. Although Sonny Gray, Pablo Lopez, Bailey Ober is not like the worst thing to have, as your three guys. And then they have Yoan Duran and Emilio Pagan, and like they have a solid bullpen as well. So, I think if the Twins were at full health, they would still take this, but because they're not, I think it's the Blue Jays to lose.
Yeah, I agree. I think they're finally going to win a playoff game for the first time in years.
They must have won one of the games against the Rangers, right? That's probably which was I guess a while longer ago than I thought it was. They won the ALDS in 2016. They lost the ALCS 4-1 against Cleveland. So that's the last time they won a playoff game was in 2016.
Yep, the Jose Bautista game.
Yep. All right, moving on to the National League. We'll start with Brewers Diamondbacks. Diamondbacks are a team who we actually did talk quite a bit about this season because we were like even early in the season, back when Lewis is on here regularly, like he wanted us to talk about the Diamondbacks, so we hadn't been talking about them yet, and they were having a shockingly good season. Now, they fell back down to earth and finished in the third wild card spot. So they just barely made it, barely edged out the Cubs and the Reds. But you know, and a lot of that is because of their hot start, but you can't discount the hot start.
Yeah. No, you can't.
And the Brewers did not have a strong finish. It's tough. These are two, like, decent teams, you know, like
they're decent, but like,
yeah,
I look at this Brewers lineup, man, and it's bad.
Yeah, but like the Diamondbacks lineup, like, really, because that's the thing, the Diamondbacks hitting has been their strength for a while. They've been like an insanely good hitting team and a mediocre pitching team, and
the
this
Brewers
year
are a good pitching team and a
bad hitting team. Yeah, but yeah, this year the Diamondbacks have been pretty middling at both. You know, like, Zach Gallen had a rough start to the season, but he really saved it, you know, near the end. Merrill Kelly had a solid season. They don't really have much beyond that. They don't really have a third pitcher.
Their third pitcher is Ryan Nelson.
Yeah, exactly. So they don't really have a third pitcher, you know?
Yeah.
Let alone a fourth pitcher. So, like,
yeah, if they actually beat the Brewers, man, that's gonna be,
if they, well, they could accidentally beat the Brewers, right? They could beat the Brewers on Gallen and Kelly, right? If that happens,
oh, they're getting slaughtered by LA. Yeah,
they're gonna get swept immediately. There's just no question.
You're gonna have to start Ryan Nelson game 1 of a division series, and then hope that Gallen or Kelly is rested enough to pitch. If not, Brandon Thatt is your game 2 starter.
If Brandon Thatt is starting a playoff game, you should just forfeit. Brandon Thatt could end up being a good pitcher, right? I don't want to, like, say, like, Brandon Thatt is cooked here. He's still young. He's still got time. This season, there's no way you can put the ball in his hand, let alone put the ball in his hand in a playoff game.
Yeah, like, I mean, like, they're god awful.
Is it going to be is game one? I mean, if they make it, is game 1 going to be a bullpen game? Like, what an insane prospect that is!
And like, even then, the bullpen's not even that good because they traded away one of their best bullpen pieces.
Yeah, they've got pieces, like, they've got stuff there that could
Paul
work.
Sewald.
Yeah, they've got Paul Sewald, and they've got, like, Kevin Ginkle, whoever that is.
All right.
You know, like, they've got the pieces that could make a good enough bullpen, but it's just...
If you call them pieces, yeah, sure.
Right. No, it's just... No, there's just...
It's bad.
I have no faith. That roster is held together by paper clips and thumbtacks. Like...
This series is really going to come down to who, like, which, it's basically an anemic offense.
It's going to be a lot of 1-0 games.
Oh my God. It's going to be miserable. Like, remember when the Reds made the playoffs and they lost 1-0 both games?
Yeah, man, it's
going to be that. And, like, it's going to be miserable.
But, like, you know, the thing too is that, like, the Brewers pitching, which has been traditionally very good the last few years, has taken a step back this year. They're good, but not as good as they were. Right. There's every possibility that a solid Diamondbacks defense gets to a, you know, Brewers, Diamondbacks offense gets through a Brewers defense that is, like, you know, slightly above average. I don't know. This is such a tough series. I think I want to give it to the Diamondbacks.
I don't, like, I legit don't know who to give it to, because it's gonna come down to, like, who gets that one run.
I know. Yeah.
Man, I don't know. I really don't know. I do wonder. No, they're probably not gonna bring him. Jordan Lawler's been terrible. I guess I'll give it to the Diamondbacks, but they're going to get destroyed by the Dodgers in the division series.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Like, slaughtered.
It's funny, you know, we say this, and this is going to end up being the most exciting series of the week. This is, like,
yeah.
Oh, we're so 100%. Bad at predictions. This is going to end up being, like, yeah, slaughterfest on, like, the Diamondbacks and the Brewers are going to be, like, it's going to be about 14-7 game.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I can't wait. Because if it's not, because if it is what we think it is, which is very good chance of it being, it is going to be the most boring thing to watch. Like, the most boring baseball of the playoffs. Like, and I'm a guy who likes games like that, but like in the playoffs, yeah. You know, like I love a 1-0 pitcher's duel, but like you kind of want to see something more than that in the playoffs, especially when it's because the offenses are bad more than it is because the defenses are good, you know?
Right.
Corbin Burns had a no hitter through 8 innings this year, and
yeah.
The Brewers lost.
They did. Like, they're bad, man. Like that offense is just terrible.
Yeah.
And like the pitching staff, even at like Burns Peralta game 1 and 2, but then like if you get to game 3, what are you going, Colin Ray?
Wade
Miley?
I think it's Wade Miley, yeah.
Yeah. And like
or you know.
Wait, is Woodruff back?
I think Woodruff is back, so maybe you go with the partially back Woodruff because he's great.
Yeah, Woodruff is back. Yeah. I wouldn't be shocked if Woodruff is game 2.
Yeah, Burns, Woodruff, and Peralta for game 3, which is kind of what they've been rolling with the last couple of seasons, which has worked for them.
Yeah, that one makes sense.
Yeah. I agree. It's just, you know, they don't have an offense. It's nuts. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's that. What did you predict anything or nothing?
I'm going the Diamondbacks are going to win this,
yeah,
and then get slaughtered by the Dodgers.
Yeah. I mean, it's just they've got nothing but holes. I cannot believe
this is a coin flip.
They don't have a fourth starter. I mean, again,
they don't have a third starter, dude.
They have two starters, and they're gonna play the Dodgers at the middle division series. It's just not. And, oh my
like,
god, dude!
The Diamondbacks have two starters, and the Brewers have a lineup that combined hits like under 250. I'm pretty sure.
It's insane, dude.
Like this is gonna be. It's going to be a playoff series of all time. That's for sure.
The Brewers are hitting 240, 319, 385 on the season.
God.
They have a team OPS of 92. OPS plus.
Fun. Great. I can't wait. Oh, God.
It's going to be William Contreras, Christian. Christian Yelich is like the second best hitter on this team, and he's not been Christian Yelich for the last 3 seasons, you know?
No.
They have Carlos Santana, you know, Sal Frelick, like Mark Canna has been good for them. They've got pieces there, but it just seems like they're all like guys who are maybe good, like the streaky hitters.
Yeah.
Streaky hitters who may or may not have a streak in this week, you know? Santana and Canna, like, it's kind of especially.
Josh Donaldson's going to be starting at third base. Good lord.
Is he really?
He probably.
They don't have a better option?
No, because they traded Luis Urias.
Jesus Christ.
Like, I genuinely don't understand why they traded Luis Urias.
Do they start Carlos Santana? No.
At third?
No. I forgot. I was reading from bottom to top, and I was like, Carlos Santana and then Rowdy Tellez. Well, Rowdy Tellez can't play third base. Carlos Santana can't play third base anymore. There's no.
Well, Santana can play catcher. Where can we put William Contreras at third?
Carlos Santana can't play catcher anymore either.
Sure, he can.
Santana can't play catcher anymore. They can play third base. There's no shot.
Just get the ball over the plate and don't let anyone steal on you.
There's no shot, dude. He's 37 years old. Can you imagine? You are 7 years younger than him. Can you imagine crouching for 2 hours?
No, 100% not.
Exactly.
I can barely get out of bed in the morning.
That's what I'm saying, man. What I'm saying. There's no way that you can crouch behind a plate. That's the harder part. At a certain age, the harder part of catching is staying crouched for 2 hours.
Like looking at William Contreras' fielding numbers, I'm definitely going Diamondbacks now because his caught stealing percentage is 17%. He has allowed 76 stolen bases.
Corbin Carroll is going to end up on third base after the first
every game. Bicko mode.
Yeah. Absolutely. 54 stolen bases this year. Jake McCarthy had 26. Geraldo Perdomo, 16. Like, this is a steely team. Christian Walker, first base, their best hitter, 11 steals. Like, they're going to go ape on William Contreras and I think they're all righties except for Wade Miley. So I don't know how good their pickoff moves are, but you gotta think the Diamondbacks get some stolen bases here. Jace Peterson with 4. All right, yeah. Pat, let's talk about Phillies and Marlins.
Yeah.
This is a series you've seen many times. This is the only series that is a division series this year.
That's correct. And this is and it's funny because whoever wins this goes on to play the Braves. So
yeah. We've seen Phillies and Marlins a bunch this year, so we've got a ton of data on that specific matchup.
Yeah, and the Marlins did take the season series from us. I don't know how to feel about this series. I'm not gonna.
It was 7-6, so it was yeah. pretty even.
It's
so
pretty close.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna look past the Marlins at all, just because every time we play them, weird stuff happens. That said, with all these games being at Citizens Bank Park, I feel good. I feel really good about that. We're gonna have Wheeler game one, Nola game two. I think Rangers game three. I haven't really said yet. All we know right now is Nola or is Wheeler Nola, the first two games. I mean, look, this could be, you know, the Phillies take care of business in two games, or, you know, the Marlins prove that they can handle a Citizens Bank Park in October, because like that's going to be a big thing. And like, that was a factor in last year's postseason, was teams were not prepared to play in Citizens Bank Park.
The Marlins have not lost a postseason series in a full season.
Oh boy.
Right. Aside from 2020, which was not a full season, the Marlins in every other postseason, they have won the World Series.
I mean, they've got a decent, I mean, they're throwing Jesus Luzardo, Braxton Garrett, Edward Cabrera as their three guys. If it goes all three. So it'll be Luzardo game one, Garrett game two, Cabrera game three.
Yeah.
Phillies were able to get runs off those guys this year.
Sure.
But the bullpen imploding in those games is the reason why we didn't get the wins off them.
Right.
And then like.
And like we said earlier, bullpens get exposed here in the. That's the third thing. I didn't say that earlier. That's the third thing that gets exposed. Hey, look at that. That gets exposed in the playoffs is a bad bullpen, because you can't hide that for long.
You cannot.
And it's not like the Marlins have like starter depth to push into the bullpen, because that happens sometimes too, where a team has four or five good starters, you can start putting starter depth into the bullpen. They don't have that either. They don't really have a fourth starter to speak of. Is it Johnny Cueto?
It would have to be, unless Yuri Perez would be able to come back, but
or Sandy might be coming back potentially.
The big thing here is the Phillies bullpen has not been that bad this year. They've had their moments where they've, you know, blown games, but they've had one of the better bullpens in the majors this year.
Yeah.
And I truly hope we're going to bring our secret weapon with us, and that's Orion Kerkering. Because if this dude makes the postseason roster, he's going to be a huge late inning weapon. If none of you have seen Orion Kerkering, go look at like some of the, he has one of the nastiest sliders I think I've ever seen from a reliever. Like, it's insane the way it moves. So I think he's going to be a big weapon. Jose Alvarado has figured it out after really recovering from the forearm injury. Jeff Hoffman has been our hero. He has been my hero this year. And, you know, Gregory Soto's looked better as of late. Sir Anthony's looked better. Strom has looked good. I don't know. I feel like the Phillies are going to take care of business and win this.
Yeah.
I mean, the offense is 1,000 times better than what Miami has right now.
And yeah, like, I mean, well, because Miami has, look, they have Arias and they have Soler, and Jake Berger has been really good, you know, so like they've got guys, right? And
they've
like John Birdie
and
like they've got some guys, Jazz Chisholm, Jesus Sanchez, like are all like most of the holes they had, they were able to plug, which is like, that's a sign of a team doing something right is like finding issues, plugging those issues and moving on, and that going well for the rest of the season. And so like that's sort of, you know, Jake Berger, Josh Bell, plugged holes and plugged those holes effectively, and so they might have something on their hands And I think, you know, Skip Schumacher's got a good shot of winning manager of the year.
Yeah.
You know,
he should win it. In my mind, he should win it.
Yeah. You know, it's really frustrating. I think I said this on the podcast before, but I was real like, and I love Skip Schumacher. And I'm still rooting for him as Marlins manager, but I was so rooting for him to become a manager, Skipper Schumacher. And like the timing was there to hire him at the Cardinals like 2 years ago before they hired Ali Marmol. And they didn't do it. They hired him to be Ali Marmol's bench coach or assistant manager or something like that. You know, and then a year later he went and got the job. And so it's just like, I would have loved for them to have kept Skip Schumacher around, a guy who, you know, like spent most of his career with the Cardinals in the Cardinals organization, is a really good manager. Like, he's just, I'm calling it right now. This is like a 30-year shot that Skip Schumacher is going to be a Hall of Fame manager.
I could see it.
I'm calling my shot 30 years in advance. So if it's now 2053, come back to this podcast and let me know if I was right that Skip Schumacher has had a Hall of Fame managerial career. What a wild shot if that comes back around. Pat, I really hope you remember this in 30 years.
I'm going to burn it into my brain, and then as I start having Alzheimer's, it'll come to me.
Okay, come to you.
It'll come to me as my grandchildren are like, all right, Grandpa, you know, time to take your meds.
Yeah.
Skip Schumacher was a Hall of Fame manager in my day.
I just can't wait till we're 60 years old and the bet comes back around.
That
Skip Schumacher, like, can you just, like, it's such a... I'm having like an existential moment here. Like, people probably like have those bets and then like they come back around. It's like, this is our 30-year bet. So Pat, I really hope you remember it.
I will do my best.
I'm not calling it on Philly Rob. I don't think Philly Rob's going to be a Hall of Fame manager. He'll be good.
No, but Philly Rob has done a very good job.
Very good job at
both seasons now getting us here. And like, look, I'm not going to sleep on the Marlins. They're the legitimate threat to beat us, but
yeah.
I look at Luzardo, Garrett, and Carrera all making their first postseason starts in a raucous Citizens Bank Park. I think the Phillies are going to take care of business and move on.
I think based on last year, if I'm assuming three games are sweeps and one it goes three games, boy, I mean, it's Brewers D-backs.
That's going three games.
Yeah, but I wanted to say it's Phillies Marlins as well. I'm going to say two, actually. I think Rays. Oh no, because Rays Rangers is really dependent. Man, they might all go three games this year.
They could, and then like if the Phillies win this in three games,
I think the Jays may take both from the Twins.
Yeah,
but that one still has a shot. But I think the other three really feel like three game series to me.
Yeah, I mean, if this goes three games, that sets up Chris Sanchez as the game one starter in Atlanta.
That's not great.
No, Chris Sanchez has been really good this year.
It's still not, I mean, like, it's fine, but like, it's not a great place to be.
I mean, Sanchez has, he's pitched very well against the Braves this year.
Sure.
I feel more confident in Sanchez starting that than Taijuan Walker.
If I asked you before we started talking about it, do you want Chris Sanchez pitching game one of the NLDS? Would you say yes?
If the Phillies had to go three games in the wild card, yes.
All right. Okay.
Because Wheeler and Nola won't be on enough rest to start game one.
No, of course. I mean, of course, we know that. That's for sure.
Yeah. I would 100% be okay with Sanchez starting game one.
All right. Okay. Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens with all of these, but I think I'm predicting that they all go again. Rays Rangers, like I said, dependent on Seager. Brewers Diamondbacks going to the Diamondbacks, you know, by a score of 2-1 in the series. Phillies Marlins, I think, goes to three. You know what? I'll call the Marlins just because you're obviously just to needle you, Pat. I'll call the Marlins.
Yeah. That's fair. Fair enough.
Yeah. I mean, it could go either way. I think it's going to go three. Jays Twins. I think the Jays take both from the Twins quite easily. And it's, I mean, it's just because of the Twins, like, are not at full health. If the Twins are at full health, I think it would also go three. I think it would go three to the Twins. So if Correa comes back, quote unquote, not 100% healthy, but he plays like he's 100% healthy somehow, like he gets that playoff health, you know, Jordan flu game health, then the Twins win in three. But if that doesn't happen, then I think it's Jays in two.
Yeah, I agree.
Cool. Well, those are our wild card previews. We are hoping to have a full episode on Friday of division series previews with representatives from the Astros, the Orioles, the
Braves.
Braves and the Dodgers. Sorry. I didn't have it in front of me, and I'm trying to figure out from who the wild card are. So representatives from each of those teams, and also representatives from whoever wins these games, which is tough because
Luck finding a Marlins fan.
Yeah, exactly. I might have one or two Marlins fans in my Rolodex. Brewers fans, we haven't had a bum on the bus in a while, but I'm sure we could get him to make time. But Diamondbacks fan, I don't know if we really like.
You will.
You will. That's not happening. Hack, who's been on the podcast before, is a Cardinals fan but lives in Arizona, so he follows the Diamondbacks to a level. So like maybe that. Other than that, Rays, we have.
I know a guy.
I think we had somebody before too, but Rays. We have Rangers. Do we have anybody like
Rack?
Oh, sure, sure.
He lives in that area.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and Twins. I'm rooting for the Twins because then we'll have Lewis back on the show. I'm sure Lewis will try to get Lewis to make time just to talk about the Twins briefly. Jays. We don't have anybody who we'd want to have on the podcast. So
fair. Very fair.
Nobody who I wouldn't veto, you know. Unless we have Jory on.
Let Jory cook.
I think that might have to be
a national writer for the NHL.
That might have to be the move, you know. We'll see. So we'll see what happens with the wild card previews, but certainly my rooting interests are all based on what teams we can get somebody to be on the show for, which is Rays, Brewers, Phillies, Twins.
That's right. You're a Phillies fan. You gotta buy that Phillies hat.
That's what I'm rooting for. You know, it's funny. I actually was supposed to buy. This is a funny story. I'll tell you later. I'm supposed to buy a Phillies hat, and I still haven't.
Oh my god.
Those are my rooting interests in terms of who we can get to guest on the podcast. Because otherwise, if it's Rangers, Diamondbacks, Marlins, Jays, like we might have two of those four. At best.
Okay.
So we'll see. We'll see what happens. Pat, thanks for joining on this fat episode. Oh, almost absolutely. A double sizer.
At any time, man. Yeah.
And Rain Delay Radio, executive produced by Lewis. My name is Naim. I edited this episode. I was joined in the episode by Pat. Rain Delay Radio releases every Monday morning at 1 a.m. Eastern Time, generally. And our theme music was composed by Chuck Lace. I will see you next time, probably on Friday, but definitely on Sunday, even if not on Friday. Okay, bye.